There comes a time in every parent's life when he or she is no longer funny. It's a painful moment. It was about 6 months ago that my daughter looked at me over the dinner table and said, "You know, Daddy, your jokes are clever, but they're not funny." Did you hear that? That's funny. See? I'm still funny. All depends on the age. And the first time, actually, that this happens to parents is when peekaboo doesn't work anymore. Do you remember that? One day, the child bursts into laughter when you appear from behind the book, and the next day they look at you as if to say, "What do you think I am, a kid? I know that trick." And as you may know, the psychologist Piaget explained the trick with his theory of object permanence. Object permanence is a stage that children reach in which they understand that something that they cannot see does not cease to exist just because they can't see it. You can hide behind something, but they know you're still there, and so when you reappear, it's not funny anymore. It's not a trick. You are, for better or worse, a permanent object. Well, the child, as the poet said, is father to the man. In other words, we retain in adulthood the characteristics of childhood, even though they are reconfigured in our personalities. And some of us are not very good, even as adults, at object permanence. We lack the ability to believe in the reality of that which is not in front of us. And one definition of developmental maturity might be to believe and hold present to the reality of things you cannot see. And this morning, I'm talking about the land of Israel. Israel is real, even when you are in Los Angeles. But it's difficult to hold in mind because you can't see it, because it is far away. The great Hebrew poet Yehuda Amichai wrote, "Forgetting someone is like forgetting to turn off the light in the backyard. So it stays lit all the next day, but then it is the light that makes you remember. You don't turn off the light, and when it gets dark again, you see that it's light outside, and you remember, because of the light, that you forgot to turn off the light." Israel forces us to remember Israel even when we neglect Israel. The state that the Jewish people have made, remember it or forget it, it will remind you that it is there. When Ahmadinejad speaks at the United Nations, you remember there's a state of Israel. It all of a sudden becomes real, whether or not you turn off a light. When we gather, as was mentioned before, for the first time to raise the flag in front of the Israeli embassy in Los Angeles, you remember that the state is there. A century ago, the Times of London decided that they would send to a bunch of intellectuals and writers and teachers and scholars the question, "What's wrong with the world?" And the shortest answer came from G.K. Chesterton, the Roman Catholic theologian and writer. He wrote back, "Dear sirs, I am sincerely yours, G.K. Chesterton." So if you ask yourself, what is it that is lacking in support of Israel in our community? The answer is short. We are sincerely yours, Sinai Temple. There is more we could do and more we will do. And the barrier we have to overcome is to forget, because it is not constantly in front of us, that the state of Israel exists. That's why we are creating the Sinai Temple Israel Center, which will do many things, including coordinate the teaching in our schools and our adult education, give vouchers to every bar and bat mitzvah for a free trip to Israel in the next year, in which I hope they will be accompanied by their families. Not an organized trip, but a trip that the family takes. First of all, so they can take organized trips like Birthright later on. But also, because every family should go as a family, and each year, instead of going that year to Italy, or to France, or to England, or to Kenya, they should go to Israel. Bring artists and scholars and teachers and writers so that we can hear the voices of contemporary Israel and see what it is that Israel creates here in the halls of our synagogue, and create material, classes, retreats, not only for us, but for our children. You know what students face on college campuses. You know the scurrilous charges, the misinformation, the cruelty, the bigotry that they face, but they don't know how to answer. They don't know what to say because no one has taught them what to say, because after all, it's not in front of them. We're going to teach our children and ourselves what to say, how to look at Israel and how to understand it, good and bad, and what it is and what it could be. And when I first was talking with many members of our congregation about the center, I was focusing on college students, but recently was sent an article about high school textbooks. Because the Institute for Jewish and Community Research just finished a 5-year study of high school textbooks used in the United States and what they say about Israel. This is what Gary Tobin, the author of the study, said. There are outrageous misrepresentations in American textbooks, some that cross the line into bigotry, not primarily through anti-Semitism, but through incompetence, lack of expertise, and sometimes pressure through Arab and Muslim groups to change the wording in textbooks. The article, which appeared in the Jerusalem Post, concluded as follows. Tobin said, if the president of Iran wants to blast Israel at the UN, he can use American textbooks to do so. Who will teach them otherwise? There are organizations all across America that try, but you know what? It's not enough. If your child or your grandchild goes to high school or goes to college and they're not equipped, it's our fault. It's what we should be doing together. If you read an article in the newspaper and don't know what to say or don't know what to think, it's our fault because we should be teaching ourselves. It doesn't matter if we duplicate efforts. It matters if there's no effort. We will work with every organization. We've already spoken to the Israel Study Center at UCLA and to the Israel's program at USC and to the Federation and to Stand With Us and other organizations about how we can coordinate our efforts. But if we duplicate an effort, that's okay with me as long as the effort is made. Because these are our children. And they're the ones who have to be taught object permanence. That Israel is there. That it waits for them. That they have to learn about it. That they have to know about it. Because if they don't, if our children don't know and our children don't care, then who will? Sometimes we scream at the world, and the world doesn't change. We know that. Why do we still scream? It's the story of the tzaddik, the righteous man, who used to go around the city of Sodom, and day after day and week after week, he would scream at the people of Sodom until someone said to him, "Don't you see you're not changing them?" And he said, "I don't scream at them to change them. I scream at them so they won't change me. Sometimes we have to speak up for Israel in the world, not because the world will necessarily listen, but because we have to speak up. Because we can't lose our voice. In the madness, you go out and you preach and you protest so that you don't become like them. So that you never become complacent about somebody who can say, I want the state of Israel destroyed one day, and then stand before the world community at the United Nations and be applauded the next. We shouldn't take that as though that is a normal order of business. When nuclear weapons can find their way into the hands of those who wish our people did not exist, what right do we have, any one of us, any Jewish institution, any community, any congregation, any individual, to be silent? There was a time when Israel was strong in ideology and strong in voice, but weak in financial and social capital. Do you know the exchange that was supposed to have happened? I hope it did. I don't know for sure if it did. Between Nixon when he was president and Golda Meir when she was prime minister, where Nixon said to her, you know, I'll take General Bar-Lev, General Rabin, and General Dayan. And she said, it's a deal. We'll take General Motors, General Electric, and General Dynamics. Because at the time, Israel had a voice, but it didn't have an economy. Now, Israel is one of the innovators in the world in a whole range of fields. But it no longer has a voice in the world. We have to help it be that voice. We have to give it words. When hundreds of millions of people still believe vile lies about Jews and about Israel, we have to say something and hope that even if they don't listen, we will listen. That our children will listen. That they will know the truth. I want to take us back a little more than 100 years and tell you a story that you may be vaguely familiar with, but you may not know the details. And the details in this case are everything. It's 1903, and the town is Kishinev. And there a boy is found murdered. And even though it became clear very soon that this young Russian child was murdered by one of his relatives, who was later apprehended, immediately the people in Kishinev began to blame the Jews. And soon it developed into a pogrom. And scores of Jews were killed, and homes were burned, and synagogues were looted, and people were injured. The New York Times, 1903, wrote as follows. At sunset, the streets were piled with corpses and with those who were wounded. The few who could make their escape fled in terror. The city is now practically deserted of Jews. Practically, but not completely, which is why 2 years later there was another pogrom in Kishinev. Just to make sure there were no Jews left in the city, despite the fact that the President of the United States at the time, Theodore Roosevelt, personally appealed to the Tsar to stop the rioting, but of course it didn't stop. It was because of that pogrom, the pogrom of Kishinev, that the World Zionist Congress entertained a proposal that up to then they had rejected. It was known as the Uganda proposal. The British said to the Zionist Congress, look at what's happening in the world. Jews are being slaughtered, they're being killed, they're being persecuted. We cannot give you the state of Israel right now, but we can give you this area in Africa. You will be safe there. You can live there, you can build a state there. Maybe one day you'll go back to Israel, but at least for now you'll be all right. One of those who was in favor of accepting the Uganda proposal was a man named Theodor Herzl. Because Herzl was terrified, knowing what had happened to Dreyfus and knowing what was happening in Kishinev. And I want to read to you from the memoirs of that remarkable man, too little remembered today, Chaim Weizmann, the first president of Israel. This is what he writes in his autobiography. Klenov, by the way, the Russian Zionist leader, broke into a shehecheyanu when he heard the Uganda proposal. That's how frightened he was that Russian Jews were about to be killed by a mass pogrom. Now here's what Weizmann wrote. The vote was by name. My late father voted yes. I voted after him and voted no. Then the names of the two delegates from Kishinev were called. And they both voted no. Poor Herzl grew pale, and then Herzl became a true Zionist. He understood the depth of the tragedy and the depth of the idea. And then he resolved upon beginning practical work in our country, even if slowly, even if symbolically, with a few hundred pounds. I still remember Herzl saying after the vote, "I don't understand. The rope is around their necks, and they still say no." Yes, the rope was and still is around our necks, and we still say no. When you read in Weizmann's memoir that the delegates from Kishinev who saw their relatives die in the pogrom voted no, you understand what the land of Israel means to our people. These were people for whom it was no illusion. It was life and death. And still they said, nowhere else. This is our land. What strikes me about this is that Weizmann said the rope was and still is around our necks. And that is a line he could speak in 2008 as he spoke it in 1903. You may not know this, but there was an order that just came down from Ehud Barak about all new construction of homes in Israel. If you don't know about the order, allow me to read it to you. New homes built in Israel require chemical and biological filters on their shelter rooms. Imagine that in your CCNRs. Not only when you build a house do you have to have a shelter room, but it better have a biological and chemical filter. The rope is still around our necks, and we still say no. There isn't anyone in the land of Israel who is unacquainted with the fact that people who would destroy them are close to getting nuclear weapons. But they're still there. They're not in Uganda, they're not in Kishinev, and they're not in Los Angeles. How can we turn away from our obligation to our sisters and brothers when we know not only what the land means, but what the land costs? When we know that we are shlichim, we are messengers to the world in which we have a voice. When we know that there are candidates who are running for president of the United States and they have to hear us, whoever you support, they have to know how deeply we care, how passionately we are committed to the survival of the State of Israel and to the flourishing of the State of Israel. This is our task. It's our generation's mission. We don't have to stand there as the delegate from Kishinev and say, "Lo, no, because, by the way, they gave their vote in Hebrew, not in Russian. But we are, all of us, a generation, two generations, three generations away from being that delegate. And if some people in the world have their way, we could be there again. Our Israel Center is for us, for our community, for our city, and for others to emulate it beyond our city, but it's for us because we are for them. We have to build something to strengthen the consciousness of Israel in people who forget about it because they can't see it. We will be taking trips this year. Ellie and I will be leading a trip. The cantor will be leading a trip. His trip will be going from Poland to Israel. Our trip will be a family trip in Israel, along with Howard and Michal Lesner. And we hope you will join us. But whether you join us on this trip or not, support our efforts to make sure that all of our children go, that they see the land in front of them, that it's not a mirage and it's not a dream, that they walk its streets, they sit on its beaches, they pray in its synagogues, and they speak to its people. We should hear Hebrew, and not only in synagogue. It's an ancient language, but it's also our language. And we, who are so gifted in so many ways and have so much, what does it take to give a little more, raise your voice a little higher, make sure that people in Israel know that we support them? We could be proud and should be proud of everything we have done, but it's only a beginning. Because what Weizmann realized more than 100 years ago, the tragedy of our people and the depth of their dreams, they're still true. They are still with us. Ayin Litzion Sophia, we learn in Hatikva. Our eyes are turned to Zion, and we as Jews can see it even when it's not in front of us. We see the land. It is our land, even from thousands of miles away. If you've never been there, you don't know what it's like. You may think you do, but you don't. Go. Help others to go. Support our efforts to create a center here in our community that will make Israel permanent in our homes and in our hearts. You know that Weizmann went on to be the president of Israel, the first president of Israel. So he got to realize the dream that he had at the first Zionist Congress. But the dream is forever fragile. And this year, for the first time, more Jews live in the state of Israel than live outside of Israel. That is an extraordinary fact, of which we who live outside of Israel should be very proud. It's a fact because when Jews all over the world fled, whether they fled from Russia or from Ethiopia, there was a place to take them in. And this year, which is, as you may know, the 70th anniversary of Kristallnacht, which was in 1938, this year we remember what it is to have a safe place and a home. We have this place, but we also have Israel. Let us never forget it. Never let our children and grandchildren forget it. Never let the world forget it. It is before our eyes and in our hearts. The dream has come true. But dreams that come true have to be sustained day after day, week after week, and year after year. That is our sacred task and our blessing, our debt to the past, and our promise to our future. Shana Tovah.